But the thing that really frustrated me was like relationship queries, right? I mean, there's... God damn it.
I thought you were just going to roll with it. I was like, yeah, cool. This is awesome. This is raw. I like this. From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show. This episode of Fragmented is brought to you by BuddyBuild. BuddyBuild is a mobile-optimized continuous integration and delivery platform that takes minutes to set up. Thousands of mobile development teams love BuddyBuild because it's the fastest way to build, test, distribute, and gather feedback on their apps. With every Git push, BuddyBuild will kick off a new build, run your UI tests in parallel on real devices, and automatically deploy your build to your users via Slack or email. With a simple screenshot, testers can send their feedback directly to you along with important diagnostic details. And if your app ever crashes, BuddyBuild will record the frequency, affected users, and traces back to the exact lines of source code that caused the crash in the first place. BuddyBuild gives development teams like yours perfect insight into bugs and empowers you to iterate on your app faster than ever, knowing that you're building an app that your users will love. Join thousands of developers who've already added BuddyBuild to their development process. Try it free today at fragmentedpodcast.com/buddybuild. Okay, Kaushik, so this week we don't have anybody on the show.
We don't, but we thought we would catch up because we have these chats all the time and we keep telling folks, hey, Don and I talk about this all the time. One day we'll just like do an episode.
Yep.
So this is one of those days where we decided, hey, you know what? We really should just capture our chats and push it out as an episode.
Yeah, for folks who don't know, we usually have these chats after we hop off the call or normal recordings. We'll just kind of hang out and chat for what we intend to be about 5 to 6 minutes of just like catching up. Hey, I'll do this, you do this, and follow up stuff. And then it turns into a 1 hour chat of technology. And we're like, oh, that would have been great to record.
Yeah, that has surprisingly happened way more often than we would have thought.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So we're hoping to capture some of that today. And I think the topic that has come up a few times in those chats has actually been Realm.
Yeah. Some time back, we had Kristen, and we talked about Realm in great detail. But I know you have a lot of knowledge in Realm. You've worked very closely with it. But recently at Instacart, for one of the apps that we use, we started to experiment with Realm. And I had a lot of questions, and like I've pinged you like a whole bunch of times. I've pinged the Realm team, and a lot of things came up. It's been extremely interesting. So I thought like, hey, why not just like hop on with Don and then like see where we take it from here.
Definitely. Now, what prompted, you know, I've been using it for a while because when we first talked about it, man, this is like in our first few episodes, we mentioned it in what we used to have as the awesome picks. And ever since then, I've been highly interested in it because of coming from, you know, working with Rails and a few other programming languages that have some type of active record system built into it. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted that inside of Android. And I've tried other ORMs inside of Android, and I never felt like any of them were just like it. Like it was never like, ah, oh, this is awesome. It felt like it did a good job, other ones out there, but I never was attracted to one. But Realm, right out of the gate, I felt like I was attracted to. And I started working with it, like you said, building it into apps and worked with them for a while. Mm-hmm. And I still, I've just recently released another app that's, you know, that's been released and it's gaining a lot of traction. It's all, you know, Realm based. So for me, it makes sense to use it because I like it. I'm very familiar with it. But what got you to the point where you're like, you know what, I think it's time to start evaluating other data persistence mechanisms?
At least in the app that I experimented it with, it started out where we had just a flat JSON structure, right? So any persistence that we needed, we would literally just persist it as a JSON, like, you know, straight up old school file.
Just like a file on a file system? Like just a .json?
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't think it was a .json. We would serialize it into like a file, right? And we would store it like on like, you know, your SD card file. Right.
Yep.
And this was done for many reasons. Like historically, when we started out, we decided we don't want a full blown database because it was only like a very few models that we were persisting. Like, you know, maybe like the user preferences or like, you know, there was like this one object. And in the early days, it was driven very heavily by a web based architecture. So essentially, the app served as just a minor shell for a glorified web service, right? It wasn't necessarily web views, but a lot of the APIs, like everything used to come down by APIs, right? Like every screen was essentially like an API hit. because all the state, all that was like managed in the server side. And for the longest time, it worked out pretty well for us. But it got to a point where the app was like way more sophisticated than just that. And recently, we've talked about this before too, right? The shift has been towards thinking about like your mobile device as like a mini computer, right? Because these things are pretty powerful. Like, you know, you can do like some crazy cool stuff with it. So there was no reason for us to get the best experience. We wanted to move it towards like trying to do everything on mobile devices, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we use this flat JSON structure and it worked pretty well. And if you think about it in terms of performance, I've looked at this as well, right? Like Realm has amazing performance. That's one of like the key features, right? Compared to like SQLite and like a whole bunch mm-hmm. of the other alternatives. Like that's like one of their tagline features, right? Up there, they're like, hey, we are like way more efficient than any sort of like alternative that you can bring in. And for the most part, I think it's completely true. I've noticed that. So we moved to this flat JSON structure. Mm-hmm. And it were, and in terms of performance, I still think like a flat file structure is actually comparable, if not better, to like maybe something like Realm. This is at least like, again, there are like many caveats. It depends on how deep your structure is, like how complicated the serialization is. So like a lot of caveats there. So take it with a grain of salt. But at least in my experience, I found it that in terms of performance, it was similar. So the thing that really won us over eventually was, hey, our objects are getting complicated enough where we have two relationships between them, right? Like they were nested objects. And if you think about it, maybe to take a simple example, if you have like a chat conversation, which has like chat messages, and those messages have like sub small objects, like different kinds of messages, it was getting to a point where the relationship queries were a little more difficult,
mm-hmm.
right? Where like, the way you would have to achieve this when you use like a flat JSON file structure is like you essentially have to write all that ORM layer yourself, right? Like you have to write those queries. Like you would have to really dive in, serialize those objects, filter them, you know, with a list query. It was getting to be problematic where we're like, hey, we're being a little crazy here, right? Like at this point, we should be exploring like a database for our convenience. And that's why I know you've talked about Realm like a lot. So I said, hey, like this is like maybe a great opportunity because we didn't want to lose the advantages we had with in terms of performance. So that's what got me started.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note for folks out there that, you know, there are ways to use and misuse various different tools. You can use Realm incorrectly where it will be slow. You can use SQL incorrectly where it will be slow. And on the flip side, you know, you can optimize the various SQL ORMs to be very fast. So, you know, whatever is, I think what we're trying to say is here, we're not a huge, like you have to use Realm as the tool, but use whatever tool is right for the job. And if you're familiar with SQL and you want to use, you know, a SQL RX Java client, do it. If you want to use ORM, do it. If, you know, this conversation today sparks your interest, well then, you know, give Realm a try.
Because this is like one of the reasons I think they created SQL Bright, right? Like they felt mm-hmm. very comfortable with writing SQL queries. So they sort of like added that layer and made it like reactive. So that's also something that's like gotten a lot of traction. So what was your tagline feature? Like why did you think, okay, this is why Realm is really cool, right? Like what was, because let's talk about like what really won us over in terms of like development.
Yeah, totally. The first thing that really struck a chord with me is when I looked at the first initial example, you know, a couple of years ago, was that you're going to be working with straight Java objects. I didn't have to write in another language. So people, a lot of times when they're familiar with SQL and Java, will think like, well, they kind of work together. Well, not really. I mean, there's an integration. There's an adapter built between the two systems. You know, SQLite is its own engine. And then there's the, you know, the Java code that runs your Android application, but still you have to write SQL code, structured query language to talk to the database. And with Realm, I didn't have to do any of that. I just said, hey, here's an object. There was a .save method or whatever. And I hit save and all of a sudden everything was in the database all of a sudden. And if I wanted to get it back out, I said, hey, Realm, go get these objects of this type of, you know, a person class, give me all of them or find the guys whose name starts with Don and it gives me that object back. And then I can go working about it. And so I thought, well, that just looks awesome. And that was like the initial spark that got me going on it. And I think what really solidified it for me was just, you know, one of those side projects that we all have. I fired it up, said, well, you know what? I'm gonna try to use Realm. I need, you know, I think it was like a simple to-do list app, which I usually try to build something in a to-do list app because it has a bunch of concepts. And all right, well, I need a database. And I created a couple of objects and all of a sudden I was like, okay, now I need to save them. All right, I need to retrieve them. And I thought to myself, I just spent 5 to 15 minutes learning and setting it up and I'm already saving data and I don't have to do anything else. That's what blew my mind. I was like, whoa, this is way more productive than me building a SQL table, making sure I'm hydrating, setting up content values. All right, do I need to use a content provider or should I use a loader or should I use this?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So that's what got it going for me. What was so interesting to you to really think like, all right, I mean, I've already been in your ear about it before, but you know, other than that, what was interesting to you?
The simplicity was definitely like a big win, like no doubt. Because if it wasn't, I'm not the fluent interface like you mentioned. Like it was just so easy to work with queries, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And for the folks that are wondering what he's talking about is, you know, when you're querying a Realm database, you basically say, hey, Realm, I need all of the, go look for the people, you know, the person class. And I want you to find all, you know, where their name is equal or starts with D and, you know, find all of them. And it's literally just you're chaining these operations together and then you get back, you know, a list. Now, it's not really just a list of T, you know, it's going to be a Realm list, which is a really souped up version of list of T and it has a bunch of extra features for Realm itself. So you can, you know, do updating and whatever and so forth. But it just made it so easy. And the other additional thing that I really loved about it was when I first started working with it, everything was done on the main thread. And I'm sure like villages are burning right now as I say that. right? Yes. Yeah. It was so fast on the main thread. That's what they said. Like, look, you can just do this on the main thread. It's fast. And we can get into why that is, you know, here shortly. But I tried it and it was fast. I never had any problems. Now, the advice at this time is they have an asynchronous API that will do things on basically a different thread and return it to you.
Right.
The advice is to use that if you're concerned with it not being fast enough. But long story short, like I was just blown away how fast it was. And then, you know, at the same time we had, if you wanted to build an iOS app, you could basically take, there's actually something called the Realm browser.
Mm-hmm.
And I could open, if I built my, or what usually happens is someone, Realm is pretty popular in iOS. Let's just say you go to a company and they're like, hey, we have this iOS app and we need you to create the Android version. And that happens all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, if they're using Realm, they can actually just take that Realm file and they can open it inside of the Realm browser, which only exists on OS X right now. But they open it up and say, okay, now I need to create the basic, you know, from this Realm file, create the Java classes for it. And it'll just generate all the Java classes off of that Realm file for you. So you can actually just really easily share that modeling between the two different apps.
So I read about this, but I didn't realize like that was like the benefit. Oh, that's pretty slick.
Yeah. I mean, so that's, you know, you're not really sharing between, you know, two different platforms at that time. You're just kind of sharing the model files, helps you get jump started. Right. And, mm-hmm. you know, Android developers and iOS developers are probably going to model things a little bit differently. But if you're building an app and it's got a lot of models, that's going to help you really jumpstart your application. So I saw all these things like, wow, this is pretty, pretty freaking cool. And then I didn't even learn about the stuff that really made it shine until I actually started working with the Realm team. And they have all these reactive features, which we'll get into shortly.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's definitely something I want to talk about because that's also like essentially the thing that like won me over, right? I'm like, no, this mm-hmm. We're definitely going with Realm because of like the reactive architecture. But to step back, you mentioned like, oh, the fluent stuff and like the queries, right? Like, oh, where person is equal to this.
Yeah.
Now, folks might think like, oh, I mean, is that really that tricky? Like, you know, is there like any benefit in that? And there was like one query where I wrote it and I was like, wow, this is just so much more easier. So yeah. Typically when you have like a list of people, right? If you want to negate queries, like, you know, they're not equal to.
Yep.
That's like typically like a condition that's like very common. Like, you know, hey, pick all the messages that are not read or something along those lines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you want to run the not query, it's beautiful how it's done in Realm. I was like really surprised because all you have to do is just like throw in a not. There's like this thing called a begin group. So you can say, hey, anything within this condition, just like use the negative of that, right?
Yep.
Now, if you had to actually implement that, like in my file structure days, what you'll have to do is you'll have to take that list. You'll have to maybe run like a filter on that list. I'm not saying it's difficult, but Realm makes it ridiculously simple. Like, and in the end, that's what we want to be doing, right? We don't want to be spending our time, right, like filtering lists or like, you know, taking like lists, making sure that like converting between arrays and lists and then making sure it's an array list. Those things are like, yeah, we shouldn't be dealing with such simple things, right?
Yeah, and you can, you know, like you said, you could filter your previous code, but what you would end up doing is like filtering and then checking like nulls and all this other kind of stuff. And
right.
You actually end up with quite a bit of code. It's really simple code, but it's quite a bit of plumbing code to get the data that you need. And what you just said, like literally if your column width on your files is, you know, if you set this in lint or whatever to be wide enough, you could literally fit this into one line of code, like of what you want to do in Realm. Mm-hmm. Just say, Realm, get me all these people where doesn't, you know, this, their age is greater than 5, but not less, you know, but not greater than, or whatever, not less than 1 or something like that.
Right. Yeah, the Fluent API works like really well. So you brought up the reactive sort of architecture, right? And like you said, the Realm list is like a really souped up version of a list. Like there's some crazy features. Mm-hmm. This is the thing that won me over. So let's maybe spend some time on that because this is really cool. Like, you know, I don't think even it gets like as much credit on like, you know, the documentation.
No, it doesn't.
But when I actually saw it happen, I was like, whoa, this is like mind-blowing stuff, right? This is the thing that really like won me over.
This is the thing I didn't learn until I actually went to, you know, I'm not currently consulting with Realm anymore, but last year at this time I was. And this is the thing last November, December at this time where I read it through the documentation, talked to a few guys at the Realm team and learned about what it was. And I was like, oh my God, this is actually the real sweet stuff that's in Realm that no one really knows about. And, you know, they call it like the reactive architecture or the auto updating objects. And basically right. What that means is I'm going to use an example here. Let's say that we have a list of persons in our database, right? You know, there's 10 objects in there. We have a query. We say, hey, Realm, go get me all the people and, you know, the person objects whose age is greater than 18, and we get 5 of them back. So now we have a Realm results of, of people, and it has 5 objects in it. Now, for some reason, let's say in the background, we have an Android intent service. It's running in a different thread. It's doing something else. Maybe it's doing a pull up to your server to check for new items or something of the nature, and it's responding to a push notification. All of a sudden, it goes up and says, oh, hey, I need to, update some data in the database, and it pulls down some new stuff from the API and then starts updating the Realm database. And all of a sudden, it adds another person to that, that person, table, if you want to say it, call it that. And that person is, the age 30. So that person actually is should be part of that query now. Well, what Realm does behind the scenes, actually, it actually updates that list for you. So it's actually updated at all times on every iteration of the Android run loop. So what you can do is then you can attach a change listener to either an object or to a Realm results or anything of that nature, or even the whole Realm itself, and say, hey, anytime this data is updated, call me back.
Like you mentioned this point, and I didn't really understand it until I saw it happen. Folks, you can attach listeners to your whole database, right? Like that's crazy. You can say anytime anything in my database is updated, notify me. Now, if you really should be doing that is a different issue. But the fact that it allows you to is pretty cool. You can say, hey, attach it to this object, like this table, right? Like my person's table. Anytime anything changes in my person's table, send me a change. You can even attach it to your query, right? Like you can say, hey, yep, I've executed like this really complicated query where I'm like negating doing all this condition and I get a yep list back. I can attach a listener to that as well. So like only if something in that set of elements has changed, send it back to me. This is mind-blowing, right?
Yeah, it could have been something that's updated. Could have been a new object that was inserted. Could have been something that's been deleted. It'll say, hey, this something has changed in this query result. We're going to call you back, and then you can do something with it. So it's completely reactive. You're not polling the database. The database is actually telling you, hey, we changed. Go do something.
Now, Don, when I heard about this, I think maybe over a casual conversation, it didn't really hit me because I was like, oh, well, I mean, I get that with Rx, right?
Yep.
Like, I mean, I can like build that architecture myself. I can get that with Rx. So like, why is this really that amazing, right? And it only took me some time to like understand why that was like pretty cool, right?
Mm-hmm. For me, one of the reasons why it was really cool is I could actually create a unidirectional data flow application. So I could actually, let's take the example of having you've built a kiosk application. It's sitting in the mall, mm-hmm, and you're showing data about people that are currently, how many people are currently in the mall. And as they walk by a sensor, it updates the data in the database. Mm-hmm. And, again, everything's happening in the background thread. Well, your application doesn't need to do anything. It just needs to sit there and respond to these notifications. And all of a sudden, everything was super reactive. And on top of that, if you wanted, you're just using the core Realm concepts here. And if you wanted to use something like Rx, you can. They actually have some Rx bindings inside of there. Have you used those at all yet?
Oh, yeah. That's basically what I use because, I'm very comfortable with Rx. Like, I try any of my element morphing, I try to switch it to Rx. And that's just like a personal preference, right? Because yep, I understand it like decently well, I feel I'm very comfortable like in sort of like, because I understand the different things that happen there. Now, the interesting thing is like you can attach it as a change listener, as you mentioned, or like you said, they have first party bindings, right? So you could just like switch it to Rx. So you get all of these benefits. And the reason I found it was interesting is because if I did have to implement this in Rx, which you can totally do, like, you know, you can take like a very regular database and you can just like, you can implement that. But like the complexity arrives at multiple levels, right? A, you have to keep executing that query, like, because otherwise, how else would you know that the database has changed, right? Or you could use like one of the other options that you have, like, you know, SQLite or like Store.io, like a bunch of these other Rx options.
Yep.
And if you have to implement it yourself, you have to also understand, like, you know, you would maybe have to use something like a subject, which again is, I mean, if you understand Rx well enough, you can do this. But again, this is like manual boilerplate that you have to write yourself, right? And this is all things that you just get automatically for free with using Realm. Like the first party bindings, it's as simple as just saying, hey, as observable. And boom, like it just like converts it to an Rx. So that's, I mean, the example you gave, it's funny. This was like so similar to what essentially I wanted to achieve, which is what I felt in the end pushed me towards using Realm, right? We had like this chat conversation model, and as our users, like they basically are navigating and doing something on the screen. If our customers like let us know about a change that they want in their order, it's extremely important for us to surface this to like the shoppers who like at Instacart. So basically at Instacart, we have like the shopper and customer model. We want our shoppers to immediately know of any customer notifications. I'm not going to go into the details of the business logic, but
yeah,
it was extremely important that any activity or screen that they are on, we need to surface that message immediately, right? And this was ridiculously simple because all I did was like I created a Realm object like for my chat conversations. And anytime that updated on my screen, it would know immediately. So it would pop up the unread indicator. All I did was like a one-time I wrote that logic one time to like query the model. And then I just said, hey, listen to this model on the screen. And boom, I get that for free in every screen, right?
Yeah, and I think you mentioned it here, and I want to make it very apparent, is like if you're querying Realm and you want to get this observable back, you know, and you're using Rx like that, it's literally just there's just a method on the result that says dot as observable, and it gives you back an Rx observable. And then from then, you're off to the races with Rx.
Right. So that was really compelling to me. Like that essentially won me over because having to implement this by hand is pretty tricky, right? Mm-hmm. But there were also some other things that I found interesting, and this is like a little more meta.
Yeah.
The thing that really impressed me was the way they do their development.
Yes.
So Realm, like the extensions are open source, right?
Well, even the core is now too.
Oh, even the core is? Oh, wow. Even better.
Yeah.
So all the stuff is open source, and they don't just like do open source, like, you know, as a namesake thing to like sort of get brownie points from like the developers. The way they operate, because as I got interested in Realm, what I started to do is I started to like poke around the code, look at like how things were done, look at the GitHub issues, because again, there are some things we should point out that are still like lacking in Realm, and we'll get to those shortly. But anytime I had a doubt, essentially what I would do is like hop on to like the GitHub database, look around, mm-hmm. and it's impressive how responsive like the core team is, right? Which is another point I wanted to talk to you about. What are your thoughts about like the core team? And also let's maybe talk about like how they do like their open development, right? Because like you've worked firsthand with it. I've seen like a couple of commits your end too to the database. So how's that been? Because it was really impressive to me because like they're very structured, and it's like a no BS kind of situation, right? They're not trying to like impress you. They're like, hey, this is in our roadmap. We're doing this. It's in the roadmap. And they say, okay, these are like the different points we have to think about because we have these other considerations. How are we going to attack this? They're very, very clear. So I would really encourage people to like see how they, just in terms of like process, right?
Yeah, it's very interesting too, because they're actually quite distributed. They have offices in San Francisco and in Copenhagen. But, you know, as Christian said on the previous episode, he's actually in a different part of the country than Copenhagen. So long story short, there's developers all over the world that work for Realm, and they do this very effectively. I'm talking all over the continent. Mm-hmm. I mean, all over the world. And they do this, all their development, right out there in the public. So if there is something that needs to be done, like, hey, here's a new feature idea, they'll just throw it right there on the GitHub issues. So if you ever have a problem, the best place to go is actually look at the GitHub issues and search through those and see if it's been solved. Most likely someone's asked a question. There's a very in-depth conversation. They have an internal Slack where they discuss, you know, new tickets come up and they'll discuss it internally. Like, all right, well, how should we handle this one? Okay. And then boom, you know, one of the team members replies if someone hasn't replied already. And it's very, very interactive. And they take every single thing from the community, very seriously, and it's nothing like with a grain of salt at all, you'll see issues linked to other issues. Like, hey, we're covering this over here. And a lot of times when I'll have an issue sometimes and I can't figure something out, I'll ping one of the guys in the team, say, hey, I'm trying to do this. And the first thing they'll do is they'll send me a link to a GitHub issue that I didn't find. Like, hey, check it out. We're handling it right here. Or, hey, it's coming. Or, yep, fix that 2 weeks ago. It's in this release. So it's very interesting that they do this. They do this with all of the bindings. So they do it with Realm Java. They do it with, you know, the Cocoa stuff. Now the core too. So if you go look at the Realm core, you can actually see people are filing issues against that. They have discussions right there. Sometimes we'll even do planning right there in the GitHub issues in Markdown. So, all right, here's what we're thinking. This is the current plan. They'll even create little example test branches, push them up, say, here's what we're thinking. Please provide feedback. And the community kind of hops in and interacts from that point forward. Furthermore, they're also very active in various different communities. So if you're an Android and you're on various different Slacks, sometimes some folks will be in there. They're also very active inside of Stack Overflow. So if you happen to post a question, you'll actually notice that, you know, some of the team like Christian and Emmanuel and a whole bunch of other folks on the team are answering those questions. So very active in the community, take everything seriously. And it's just fantastic to be a part of it. And if you're ever interested to see how things are done, just hop over in the Realm issues and you'll see a whole bunch of stuff going on.
I think they do like a phenomenal job. It must be said, like, and then we'll throw into the show notes, like the last episode that we have Christian on, right?
Yeah.
These are some extremely smart people, you know, these, like the folks who work at Realm, like, I mean, it's the same reason, like, you know, when folks ask me, hey, like, you always keep recommending like Square libraries. Why do you do that? There are these other libraries. I'm like, yeah, I mean, there are. And if they're good, I'll start recommending them. But, you know, I've noticed, and it's like this bizarre sort of correlation that, like, you know, when you have super smart people working on a library, it tends to be pretty good, right? So,
yeah.
I think that holds really well here. And some of my friends have also mentioned that Realm has some other open source libraries in the iOS platform. And apparently those are doing, like, for example, there's a Swift linting library. I don't know if it's Swift or just like an iOS linting library. Apparently that's like pretty well known. So, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, and you know they contribute to the community in many other ways too. I mean, they have, you know, you can see on their GitHub page, everything is open, Swift Lint and, you know, the Realm Java, Realm Core, Realm.net, all kinds of stuff out there. But at the same side, a lot of folks that are listening to this have probably seen various and watched various videos on the Realm website. And so they're very active in the community, you know, recording the lessons, providing the content back to the community. So it's been a big help. But to rewind for a second, to your point of, you know, very intelligent folks, I can't agree more. I was talking to some of the core guys to learn some of the internals while I was helping write some documentation. And some of the things that they would explain to me would just literally make my mind melt. You know, I'm just like, what did you just say? Like, whoa, like this is crazy. So very, very, they're very intelligent. So much stuff's going on inside of Realm, which is kind of something that you had brought up previously as well, is that you actually learned a lot by just browsing the repository. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Like, just if I wanted to understand how things were working, I would just like hop onto certain issues. And I mean, the other funny thing is, even if they have certain things, they would like cross-link between repositories. Like you said, the Realm core library, right? So I would see something and they say, hey, this is because X happens in Realm core and we're waiting on that to happen. And they'll like link to another issue. And then I'll just like follow the thread, you know, I'll go to that issue, I'll read. And then I'm like, oh, so like, this is why a certain thing happens in this very specific way, right? Just like going through the repository, like, is immensely helpful. And I mean, this is like the advantage of open source, right? Like, I mean, in many ways, many folks in our community as well, like, they see the open source code, like, even if it's in the AOSP for like Android and understanding why a certain thing happens.
Yep.
It works like really well. Like, you have the code, you can just like go dive in and then see what's happening. And then that's like the truest form of the documentation, right?
Exactly. And that's, you know, at the same token, that's also another huge problem because things are not as exposed as well as they could be. So you probably hopped into the code and you're like, oh, that's how it works. But it might've been something that could have easily been exposed in the documentation. So that is one of the downfalls of Realm, is sometimes there's so much going on, you don't even know that it's there. But again, I know from speaking with the team that is something they're working on. But if you do want to understand it, as I said in a recent tweet, like, you know, go take a look at the source code if you have a problem. They're also very open to you submitting PRs. Like, you can take a look at the contributor list. It's massive.
So, okay, I guess at this point, because people might be listening to this and they may think like, hey, these guys are really pushing hard on like Realm, right? Like, what's the deal there? It isn't all sunshine and rainbows, right? There are like some things. I mean, even like to this day, I feel like there are like some problematic areas. And yep. I think we should like spend some time on that, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So what's some of the issues that, some of the things you ran into that you're like, oh, okay, I still feel a little pain there.
So, well, the first one I wanted to bring up is actually the primary key situation, right? So like as any database has, like there are like primary keys. The funny thing is they don't necessarily have compound primary keys. So what are compound primary keys, right? If you have an object and you have ID as your primary key, well, all is good there. You know, you slap in the primary key annotation, you're good. You're ready to go, right?
Yep.
I think it's required. I'm not sure if it's primary key, but oh well. Look at the documentation for details. But if I wanted a combination of two keys, right? Like say, for example, I had a person, right? And I wanted, for some reason, I wanted the name and email, a combination of the name and email to be a primary key, right? Which is very common. Like this is what we call a compound primary key in databases. That is not possible. Well, there is like a workaround, but you cannot just apply the required key. You can't apply the primary key on more than one attribute. Like Realm is not happy with that.
Yeah.
And this like kind of like, I found this very perplexing because I was like, well, this is not necessarily very, I don't understand the internals, but this isn't like too big an ask, right? I want a combination of two fields to be a primary key. And that kind of like, I found that interesting because, and my use case was like, I had a model that comes down from the server, right? And because I don't necessarily dictate what the ID is, like the server sends back a JSON response and it says, hey, the combination of this type and this ID is unique. The ID alone is not unique. You have to take into consideration the type of the object, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which basically means I need a compound primary key, right? And so that was my use case, and I couldn't exactly achieve that directly with Realm. Now, there is a workaround, but what are your thoughts on that?
That's one of the things that I've seen a few folks complain about as well, that there's no primary keys, and that was one of the things that folks didn't really like a lot. The other thing that really bothered folks for a long time is that you had to basically extend Realm object. And a lot of people don't like being forced to extend anything that they didn't create themselves. And the reason for that was because that's how a lot of the bindings are created. A lot of this stuff is done in an annotation processor, so the code is written for you. And that's where all you got all your helper methods from. Hey, is this object valid? Or, you know, can I, you know, find a query? Can I delete it? Can I whatever? And that's how you can do it. Now, they've recently implemented the Realm class annotation.
Right.
And then you don't have to extend Realm object. The only thing different there is you have to use some different helper methods and using the Realm static methods to actually get things working a little bit. And then also there's the other thing of a lot of folks are very heavy on using value objects, which we just recently talked to Ryan Harder about that in a previous, I think it was episode 66. And, you know, that's not implemented yet. There's a bunch of tricky things that are going on. And if you want to use immutable value types with Realm, and what the links to these various issues where they're actually being tracked and again, developed in the open. So it's very interesting. Have you noticed any other things? I think I remember you talking to me about some getters and setters at one point. Did you ever work that out?
Yeah. I mean, so it was kind of funny because one thing you should note, and this is very, very perplexing when you start off, right? And they had this in their FAQ again. So if you go and like look around the documentation, at some point you'll reach this. So I'm using my application. I'm debugging my application, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in this class and I'm like, hey, I want to check what the value is on this object. So I pull the object and I say, okay, dot type or like dot name, right? So I do like my class object, like say I have a variable called m person, right? And I'm using the Hungarian notation here just because it makes it easy to explain. So I say m person dot m name, right?
Yep.
You'll see it's null.
Yeah.
And then you'll see like all of the values are null and you're like, what? Am I doing something wrong? Did I understand Realm incorrectly? Like what's happening here? And it took me some time, but then eventually I realized, well, there's like a very different model, and this is something that you should note. Those getters and setters are actually pretty important. Like, you know, they're not just regular getter setters on your POJO. The Realm has this whole thing called a Realm proxy class.
Yep.
And it works pretty, it's a little different. So instead of just saying m person dot m name, instead of accessing the variable directly, in your debugger, if you say m.get name, like use the actual accessor method, you'll find the value.
Yeah, and this is actually segues back to the previous topic about how Realm is so fast. Now, what actually happens I'm going to kind of give you a 30,000 foot view here, but what happens is when you're working with one of those objects and you say, hey, get me that name of that object, what it's actually doing is it's reaching directly into Realm, like directly into the Realm database and giving you that value.
Interesting.
And so it's not querying the database, loading it into memory, putting it into some buffers, then copying it over and then bringing it to you, and then the data is out of date. It's actually reaching directly into the database saying, hey, give me that age.
Nice.
So okay. If something was to happen in the background and it would update, change the name from, Don to Kaushik, and then you pulled it now, and then in 2 seconds you pulled it again, it would say Kaushik. Because we're not working with a copy. We're actually touching the real database. It's really going directly down. And all that code's inside of Core, which is insanely, it's C++. It's written from the ground up. But that's one of the reasons why it's so fast, because it's literally reaching directly down into the database. And the proxy is what, helps get that done. So that's probably one of the reasons you saw that.
Oh, that's so interesting. I didn't necessarily realize that. It's almost like you get the best of both worlds. Like you get lazy loading in some ways, but it's actually not even lazy loading. It's like direct loading, but so actually now that I realize what it is pretty cool. just like watch out for that. And a quick follow-up question, so typically you said you use Realm 2, right? Do you use like the composition style or the inheritance style? So do you like extend Realm object, or do you use like the Realm class thingy?
I've been using Realm since before Realm class annotation was around, so I've just been using inheritance.
So that's the other thing. I've noticed that inherently, if you use like the extend Realm object, like there are some things that just work better. Like for example, if you didn't want to have getters and setters and you just wanted to have like basic public fields, I think if it's a Realm object, and this might just be like a bug or something, but I apologize because I don't remember the specifics, but I found that if it was a Realm object, it just tend to work better. And also usually if you just stick to using getters and setters without like worrying too much about, if you use it as advertised, it works like without too much issues. But the minute you start to want to sort of like customize this object, you run into like some issues.
Yeah. So I stick with the inheritance. It works for me. But there are some folks that do prefer to use the Realm class annotation.
Oh, yeah. I use the Realm class thing as well. Yeah. Because one of my reasons was I already had like this model. Like I had my models defined as POJOs in my application, right?
Yep.
And so I didn't, and they implemented certain things and they extended already certain classes. So I didn't want to necessarily like complicate those things. So essentially what I did is like it was really easy for me to just slap on the annotation saying, hey, this is a Realm class, right? And then you can say implements the Realm interface or it's Realm object, I think. But basically, that was just an easy way for me to sort of not disrupt the existing state of affairs in my application and get going with Realm. So I stuck to just using that.
Which is a very good point you had brought up, before, that you don't have to go, all in when you want to try out Realm. One of the best use cases that I have seen is exactly what you're talking about. You have a couple of objects. Usually there's some type of state persistence, maybe like a local cache. It's only a couple of objects. That's a perfect example of when you want to try out Realm. Just throw it in there, use it for the cache. You can again get, and cache is a perfect example because you want to know when it's invalidated or updated. So you can attach those change listeners and get that reactive nature out of it. And so you can, if you want to, take your existing objects, throw the Realm class annotation on there and use it, to test it out. That's a great introduction into it.
All right. So speaking about gotchas, the other one that really got me multiple times is this whole concept of the Realm instance sort of like closing out on you. So whenever you act, and like, correct me if I'm wrong, I might be incorrect in my thinking, but this is like what I've noticed from in practice, right? Essentially, anytime you open up a Realm object, you also have to close it. Right. So this is like very traditional sort of like database transaction level thing.
Open a Realm database. Yeah. You want to close the database. Yeah.
Yeah. So, initially when I started out with Realm, I thought there was like some magic that was happening, but it isn't necessarily magic, right? It's just essentially basic reference counting, which is actually pretty cool. They use reference counting. They don't have like a garbage collection kind of thing. So essentially it's like +1, +1, -1, -1. And we did an episode on like the differences between like garbage collection and reference counting. So you can have a look at that episode. But essentially Realm is reference counted. So if you open up an instance, you want to make sure you close it, because if you don't, well, you'll start leaking sort of like memory, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you want to make sure you always close that, which, you know, usually what I do is I'll wrap it in a try-catch, you know, I'll you know, open the Realm instance and then I'll close it. Now, what I also do at a higher level, you know, I'm using Dagger and, you know, some people may agree or disagree with this, but I actually have one instance just for the main thread. And that instance I actually create and then I can inject it anywhere I want. And then I don't ever, as long as I'm on the main thread, I'm careful about staying on the main thread, which we'll talk about threading in a second. When I'm using it, make sure I'm on the main thread and I don't use it anywhere else. And then if I need to use anything in a background thread, I'll, you know, make sure I open and close and so forth from that point.
Yeah, I really want to ask you some follow-up questions on the threading thing because I think that's super interesting. But where it got me was like, because like I mentioned before, I was using it in conjunction with Rx, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it gets really tricky because in Rx, essentially what you're doing is when you return the observable like of elements, right? So you're returning like a realm list, but like, you know, or like an observable of realm objects outside. Mm-hmm. This really got me because I didn't necessarily understand how I was going to close it because the problem is if you're exposing an observable, right? I'm going to use those elements, but what would happen is if I close the realm instance as I was supposed to inside the observable, then when I access those elements, anytime I access the element, it would throw an exception saying, hey, this realm instance has already been closed. You cannot take any more actions on top of this, right?
Yeah.
So it took me some time, again, because I'm sort of comfortable with Rx, I know the workaround here. And for the folks who are curious, essentially you just add an onTerminate call, right? Like the advantage with observables is you can say, hey, execute this when you're done with this observable, right? And as long as you make sure that you're terminating your observables correctly, you know, the whole composite subscription, adding to a subscription, making sure like on your activity stop state, you sort of release those subscriptions. As long as you do that correctly, you can say do on terminate. So you can execute like a side effect and say inside that, close the realm instance, right?
Yeah, and if folks are, we're getting really into the weeds here with Rx Java and implementation. And if you're interested and want to know how this works, Christian actually created the Realm team, but it was mainly Christian initially created the Rx Java example. And we'll put that link in the show notes. And he does a bunch of stuff there where he's, you know, using the observables and so forth. So definitely check that out and you can see how they're doing and working with different parts of Rx.
So let's go ahead and talk about like this threading thing, right? So this is another very interesting aspect of Realm. Whenever you use a Realm instance, it's tightly bound to the thread that the Realm instance was created on. And you mentioned this, like you have through Dagger, you inject like a Realm instance that's linked to the main thread, right? So can you tell us a little more about this? And the reason I believe is because if you try to access that same Realm object on a different thread, so like, you know, if you're in between an Rx call, you have hopped onto a different thread, like you're in your IO thread and you access that Realm instance, it'll blow up on you, right?
Yeah, exactly. Multi-threading has kind of been the elephant in the room with Realm for the longest time. As I said before, you can run everything on the main thread and it is fast. And, you know, again, villages are burning as I say that, but the reason why you know, Realm is basically thread bound is because multi-threading is hard. And there is a talk, actually a white paper written by Edward Lee, who's a PhD at Berkeley, University of California. And it's called The Problem with Threads. And this is a little snippet from it. And it says, concurrency in software is difficult. Non-trivial multi-threaded programs are incomprehensible to humans. Basically meaning that threads are, you know, are a period of time, you know, and if you put them on an XY axis, they, you know, left to right is, you know, time bound. And if you have multiple of those things going on and different operations happening at different times, well, let's try to get three in your head. You can probably get three in your head and kind of manage that okay. You're probably still going to get some bugs. Mm-hmm. You get over three, like, and all of a sudden the Cartesian product is just insane. Like 16 different possible combinations of anything that could happen at any given time. You know, add another one, it's even harder. And it just gets crazy. And so when you actually, how do you solve these problems and how have previous databases solved these problems? Well, what they've normally done is just applied lock. So let's take the typical example of, I want to, you know, read from the database or I want to write to the database and say, I'm going to write to the database. Actually, I'm going to flip that example. I want to read from the database and then, but I want to make sure that the data is consistent. So if someone is writing to the database at the same time, I maybe get inconsistent data out of the database. You know, I may ask for these things and something else may come back. So how do we solve that? We typically throw a lock on that. And so you see this in typical databases as a read-write lock and locks are applied. So I can't write to the database until someone else has done reading from it and vice versa. And so what ends up happening is you start placing locks all over the place. And what happens is locks are essentially slow. And so that creates a humongous problem because now we have all these locks over the place. If you're applying these locks and you're trying to do the same thing for, you know, in your application, you're going to eventually create some bugs because you think you've got all the cases covered, all the edge cases of like, all right, well, this thread's writing over here and this one's over here. You're bound to miss it. Threading is insanely hard. Like goes back decades. It's a decades old problem of how hard threading is. And it's one of the reasons like that we, you know, like, was it like languages like JavaScript come up with like promises just to make things easier to read. Like it's just hard.
Right.
And so the big sell on Realm with this threading lock is, and this is from the documentation actually, and this is actually a quote that I got from Alexander Stigson, which is one of the co-founders of Realm. And it says is the only limitation, you know, with Realm is that you cannot randomly pass Realm objects between threads. If you need the same data on another thread, you just need to query for that data on that other thread. Furthermore, you can observe the changes using Realm's reactive architecture, which we already talked about. Remember, all objects are kept up to date between threads. Realm will just notify you when the data changes. So it's basically saying like, look, we can get rid of all those threading problems that you've had, those threading headaches, just we can get rid of those. The only limitation is like, you just need to make sure that you're using the same Realm instance on every thread. So each Realm instance is thread bound, meaning I can have a Realm instance open on Android's main thread. You know, I'm watching some data to update my activity or whatever. And I have a intent service updating data. I'm going to open a different Realm instance in that thread. I'm going to say, you know, realm.open or whatever it is. And then it's going to give me that Realm instance. I can work with it. And when it's done closing it, Realm will sync up in the background because Realm is a multi-version concurrency control database, meaning that actually any given time, multiple versions of the database are actually running at any time. And then upon the next iteration of the run loop, everything kind of gets squished and munched together and everything is up to date.
It's pretty complex. And I remember reading like an article where they talked about this, right? Or maybe I was seeing the talk.
Yeah.
But I just want to like highlight the point that you mentioned. This, and you put it beautifully, right? Like the thread locks is a problem. Like you have like the situation where maybe like the data that you're accessing has like just changed underneath you. Realm solves this problem. Like, you know, it's like a trade-off almost, right? Like they
it
say
is a trade-off.
All you have to do is make sure that the Realm instance you're accessing, it belongs to like the same thread, right? Like access it on the same thread. They handle all those other problems for you. So like even if on another thread, like it's the same concurrency problem that you're mentioning, you've updated data on like a background thread, your current thread handles that. Like, you know, all like you're not going to get stale data. You'll get like the most up-to-date data when you access that object again.
Yep.
But the only limitation is you got to like stick to the same thread per Realm instance, right? So it actually hit me now. And so like, I just want to call that out because that's like a really good thing.
Yeah, This is one of the drawbacks of Realm. It takes a complete paradigm shift when you're working with it to realize like, okay, and especially if you're used to working with Rx, where you're just tossing threads over left and right and
You're
changing them around. Like you can't really do that in Realm. You're like, okay, I need to stay on this thread if I'm going to work with this data. And then when I'm done, I can do something else. And it's just remembering that because you'll get into these weird instances where you get that error that you talked about. Like, hey, your Realm instance has already been closed. Like you can't do this operation on this object or something. But they solve all of those huge problems for you. Like, hey, just don't worry about the threads. Do it on the same thing. And we'll just take care of everything else for you. Which is, as developers, it's hard to let go sometimes. You know, we're control freaks.
Right. Oh, for sure. I had to wrestle with it too. But like, I mean, like this explanation you just gave me now makes so much more sense. And I understand, okay, it's a trade-off and I'm willing to make that trade-off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because otherwise you just get locks and it's slow.
So you also brought this instance where like, hey, you're going to run into this issue. Let me also give you another example of like where I found this to be a little tricky, right?
Yeah.
So I usually like to model my architecture in a way where it's similar to the repository pattern that some people follow, right? Essentially, mm-hmm. I have like this POJO object and I'm going to call it like a DB API object, right? Like a DB service essentially. And I say all my database operations are relegated towards this DB service object, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I do this is because then it makes unit testing easy for me because what I can do is in my unit tests, I can just like mock out this DB service object. And I can swap it out with like, you know, elements saying, hey, whenever anyone calls you, like return this set of elements. And that's a very typical sort of setup, which allows you to like do proper unit testing. I don't have to worry about actually spinning because the thing people have to realize is Realm works very closely with Android. You need an Android framework to work with Realm. You can't just like spin Realm on a pure Java environment, right? At least mm-hmm. to my knowledge. So that can get a little tricky, because then in the unit test, like, what am I going to do? I don't have an Android instance. I'm running this on the JVM, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the way I had to get around this is, to give you an example, what a typical query that I would like to execute is dbService.getPeople, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the trick here, again, is it would return a list of Realm objects. And those are, again, bound to the Realm instance. So even my unit test, like, it's not going to work, right? There's multiple problems. And it, again, points also to like the closing of the instance. At what time do you close the instance, right? Because if you have the DB service object return this results and I'm accessing it at like multiple points, then how do I know when to like close the Realm instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to put that, I don't want, so one way I could avoid that is I could pass in a Realm instance, right? And say, hey, whenever you query, use this Realm instance. So, and then at the activity layer, what I could do is say, hey, on resume, and I see many of the examples that I see follow this pattern, right? So like on resume, I create the Realm instance in my activity and I pass it down the chain all the way to the DB service object, use that, and then make sure in the end that DB service object is closed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that was like a very, I felt that was a little clumsy, because it makes me feel like I'm adding way more boilerplate than is necessary, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I did find a workaround eventually. And this is, again, it points back to like the documentation not necessarily like highlighting this in a way that it makes sense. So what I did is, inside this DB service object, I would open the instance, execute the query, and then close the instance. I would like try to contain it within the DB service object, right?
Okay.
But what I would do is I would return a copy of the object. So I won't return necessarily the exact Realm object. Like, you know, as you mentioned, the Realm object that's being pointed to at the source of the DB, I wouldn't necessarily return that, but I would return a shallow copy, right? Deep copy, rather. I would return. So just think of it, if I had like this person Realm object, all I want is a similar Java object that's like one to one, but is not linked to Realm, right? So if I could have like a copy of this, like, you know, if I could just like make a copy of this, that would work, because then what goes out, then the responsibility is mine, right? That whatever comes out of the DB service object is basically just any random Java object. I can do whatever I please with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it took me some time, but I realized, and this was in a GitHub issue where I think Christian pointed out, Realm has this really cool operation called copy from Realm, right? And what copy from, and this was, I believe this was a feature that was requested and it was added on later. So if you, we'll make sure to add a link to that GitHub issue. And what they did is, because people asked for this requirement, they said, hey, all I want is just a Java copy, because sometimes I don't have access to like the Realm object. I don't want to have access to the Realm object, right? And a typical use case is in unit tests. I don't have access to that. All I want is just a Realm copy, because I'm not necessarily testing my DB service. I'm testing something else that requires the DB service object, right?
Yep.
So this copy from Realm essentially does just that. It creates a deep copy. So it says, hey, okay, I'm going to create an exact copy of this object and I'll just give it to you and you can do what you please, right? And so essentially that's what I did. I added, and this was really easy, especially because I was using like an RX architecture. I just like slapped on an operation saying copy from Realm, like, you know, map and then copy from Realm, and boom, I just get a copy, right? So everything is still contained in my DB service object. It took me some time to sort of understand that, but now that I have that, it actually works perfectly well. So like, I don't even have to like worry about creating and closing it per activity. I just create the Realm as and when I need it, right?
Yeah. Now, the only issue that you're going to have with that is that those are a complete decopy, unmanaged deep copy of those objects, meaning that Realm is not watching after them anymore. Furthermore, meaning that if any updates to those objects happen, you're not going to be notified. Those are going to be invalid at that point, because they are completely, you know, it's just a copy, a in-memory copy of those objects. So that's something to be aware of. You can't attach listeners or anything like that to those objects.
Well, I mean, what essentially I do is I expose an observable from the DB service object itself.
Okay.
And so what that does is it keeps returning a new copy every time. So I sort of get the advantages of both.
Gotcha.
In some ways. Because internally, I am using the listener and exposing an observable, right? So that internal DB service object is getting those changes. Like, it's indicating to like that, like, there's a very Realm-like behavior to that, right?
How many objects are you returning on average? I'm just wondering from that. Do you know?
You mean in terms of like a typical example? I don't.
Yeah, like Is it like a couple objects? Is it 5,000 or 100 or 100,000?
Oh, no, just a couple of objects. Like, okay. Yeah, for sure. You're right. Because if it's like, if I'm like on the Twitter list newsfeed stream and I'm returning like a billion objects, like, yeah, you're going to run into memory issues, right? So so far, thankfully, I haven't run into the need where I have that many objects. But yeah, you're right. Like these deep copies are a copy, which means more memory. And you have to realize. And there's also like a helper. So you can, it gets really tricky. And if you read the GitHub issue, Christine actually talks about this, you can pass in saying, hey, how many levels of nesting do I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, with the copy from Realm, you can have child Realm objects, so for example, if I had a chat conversation Realm object, which internally had chat messages, and maybe that chat message had like, I don't know, like an image object and then a content object, and you're storing all of these as independent Realm database tables, you know, like a whole typical one-to-many relationship. You can say, hey, just get me to one layer, right? Like, I don't care about, like, the deep nested object. And I think this is done for, like, a performance reason.
Mm-hmm.
You can also say, hey, no, just give me everything, right? Like, I want the truest representation of the object. So, I mean, whatever works. But again, this is something that you have to understand is happening.
And people are probably wondering, like, wow, what if I have a ton of data in my object, in my database? And what, you know, in the tip, let's say I'm using connected objects, I'm using regular Realm objects, I'm not using copy from Realm, just doing the regular queries. If I query a list, say, find me all of the persons in the database, and it's, you know, it's 200,000 records, please note, you're not loading all 200,000 records into memory. Mm-hmm. It's actually like, kind of think of it like a pointer down directly into the database says, hey, we're currently, you know, if I'm going to iterate over them, I'm currently on this record. And as you iterate over them, it's going to pull those objects out. So you're not loading everything into memory all at once. So it's very memory efficient. Too.
Yeah, for sure. If you go like the traditional route as is designed, this thing is crazy optimized, right? Like you won't have any issues there. So yeah, for sure. It's good that you brought that up.
Now you also ran into an issue during this very, you know, very similar thing that you were going through, is where you were trying to read stuff in from your API because you had some situations where you had some weird API naming conventions and you wanted to change them over. You know, like, hey, how do I get that data into the database? And then, hey, can I also change a column name or anything like that? Do you remember what those situations were?
Yeah, so this is again, like, this is one I actually couldn't find a workaround, and I think there's an issue tracking it, right? For example, my API sends me down an object, and as this is like a typical backend, like, you know, it's JSON, right? So like, if you take an example, like maybe we take the same person example, maybe two variables are like first name and last name, right? So the column name would be first_name, you know, so it's like your typical snake casing, like lowercase, lower snake case. The problem is that is very un-Java like, right? In my actual Realm object, essentially, I don't want to keep the name of the variable as like first_name. I want to keep it as like first in small casing and then a capital N and then AME. So like, you know, the camel case. I want to keep it as a camel case variable.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Realm is, and this is like, again, this is like one of those, it seems so basic and it's surprising that they don't have it already, is you can't have custom column names, right, in your database. Like you cannot say, hey, in my Java object, in the Java Realm object, keep it as a camel case. But actually, in the end, when you save it, the database, I want the database to actually be named first_name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't find a workaround for this. And this was like kind of funny because, again, we added it both for the iOS and Android application. And we were like, hey, we need to keep this consistent because, and this is one point we'll remember to touch on because, like, you know, they have the Realm mobile platform. So one day everything could just like synchronize across platforms.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, I didn't want to necessarily change my variable names, right? And like, I couldn't find a workaround for this. So actually, all in the Realm database, if you open up the Realm database in my Android application, the column name would be first name, you know, in camel case, which is kind of like, it's a little iffy. But I think they are thinking about solving this.
What was the value coming down from the database? So first, would it be first_name?
You mean from the Realm database or from the API?
No, from the API. What would an example be?
Oh, yeah. So it would be like, if you had like a JSON object with person, the first_name would be the key and the value would be maybe Don space Felker as a string, right? Well, Don, sorry. And then last_name would be, you know, Felker. And
how are you storing that now in the database?
I would parse the JSON object, and you can use a very typical JSON serialization. You know, if it's like JSON deserialization library, right? So if it's JSON or Jackson or Mashi, whatever sort of like works for you, I would have to convert that API object to a Java object. And in this case, it would be a Java Realm object, which I could then save into my database, right?
Yeah.
The problem is when I do the deserialization, when I convert it from like a JSON object, like first underscore name, to the Java object, it goes into the camel case because at this point it's like a Java object, right? When I say save to Realm, if I provide it a Java object and say save to Realm, essentially it maps it to the variable name in your Java object. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially I've lost that first underscore name, and in my Realm database, it's first name, right? So it's like the camel case sort of thing.
I guess the issue I'm having is, do you want it to be first underscore name in your database?
I do potentially, because then that would mean the iOS folks would have to have camel casing, right? And camel casing is not common in like iOS land, I hear, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like the other like tricky thing is, we had like some objects that actually unfortunately use Hungarian notation, right? So it's like M first name.
Oh, okay. I finally see what you're saying. You say you want to keep the naming convention from the API. So it says first underscore name. And when it gets saved to the database, it should be first underscore name. But in Java, you would like it to say first name, but in camel case, right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. I haven't actually had to deal with that, because at first I was thinking like, because typically what I do is I'll get some crazy API and I'll just save everything in the Java format. Like I come down, it's like underscore ID, and I'm like, I'm not saving that.
Yeah.
And I'll just use the serialized name property of JSON or whatever library I'm using, and it will just change it, you know, and I'll just say, hey, the field is actually called ID. And then when it gets saved, it's in the proper format and I don't worry about it from that point forward. But I guess if you're trying to share, you know, these objects across different platforms, then that could be an issue.
Right. I mean, in all fairness, you're right. This is maybe a problem we would see later on. It's not something I immediately see. But I mean, you know, at some point it might get a little tricky.
Yeah, exactly. And they are tracking this in their, again, online on the issue tracker. It's issue number 1470, which we'll put in the show notes as well, where they talk about using a custom annotation for defining the class and fields names so they could differ. But it's currently in their backlog.
Right. The other, there was another tricky situation. What was the other tricky?
Yeah, I think you were like partial, was there like the partial updates one?
The partial updates one. So let's talk about the disadvantage. So whenever, and this is like not necessarily specific to Realm, like this is a very common problem across, right? Essentially, I have this new Java object, right? That I get from my, API.
Yeah.
And I say, hey, update the copy of Realm with this. The tricky thing is, usually what you would like is to say, hey, actually update only the non-null values, right? Because what would happen is, like from your API, in order to make sure that you don't have a very big payload, they would only send certain attributes, right? So they would only send like maybe 3 or 4 attributes.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen is I would use JSON or something to serialize this into a Java object, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would again work perfectly. Those 3 fields that I need would get updated as required. So no issues there. The problem we would run into is essentially, other than those 3 values, right, that came down from the API, other than those 3 variables, everything else would be null, as it should be in a serialization. Because in Java, you cannot say don't have a value. It's either null or it's not null, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And now when I say copy to Realm, where I'm going to run into an issue is essentially it would update all the other values to null, right? So I'm getting this API that says, hey, only update these 3 values. But when I say, when I actually update my Realm object after having serialized it, it'll just like wipe out all the other values and make them null, right?
Yeah, that can be tricky there. At first, like, what? This is not the expected behavior.
Right. But this is very common too. So initially when I did a little research, I thought like, hey, maybe this is something that's only like typical to Realm. But that's actually not the case. Like many databases have this problem. Now, it should be pointed out, again, this is there is a solution for this, because Christian actually pointed me to it. So Realm also has this feature where you could copy from a JSON directly into the database, right? So instead of like going through the serialization problem, you can say, hey, take this JSON and then just like straight up map it, use that into my database. And if you provide a JSON object, what happens with Realm is that it understands that the values that have not been provided shouldn't be updated. So this is perfect for our use case, right?
Yep, exactly.
But again, this is where, like, and this is like the problem that I was telling you that I ran into. You can do that. But if you say from the API and say copy to Realm directly, right?
Yep.
The keys from my API object are going to be like a lower underscored case, right? Which means it would just basically not find that value when it's copying directly into Realm.
Yeah, which could be a problem, yeah.
Which could be a problem. So essentially what I had to do, and this is like a minor mapping that I had to write, I had to construct another JSON object which would map the fields from my Realm object and then use that to copy to Realm directly.
Wow, that's kind of a pain.
It's kind of a pain. So, but I mean, the value...
You should fix your API.
Yeah, I know. Just, right? Just change the API. Problem solved, right?
Just kidding.
Yeah. So, and this is, again, like this, like you rightly said, if you don't necessarily care about these things, like you don't, like typically in a very regular case, you won't run into this problem. But if you want to use a combination of two features where like I want to copy to Realm only certain attributes, and I want to make sure that, like, you know, those attributes map directly to what my... I don't want to change my Java class to have the same variable names as my API. Then you run into this problem. And so the way I had to, like, work around that is to write, like, a custom serialization mechanism, right? So I had to, like, serialize it into a JSON that would map one-to-one with my Java object and then save that into Realm.
So do you guys actually share your Realm... your Realm database between iOS and Android, or are you just preparing for that?
That is a good question. We are basically just preparing for it. I mean, you're right in calling me out. Like, this is like, you know, if you apply Yagni, you're not going to need it now. So,
yeah, true. Yeah, that's true. It's kind of preparing for what you don't know. But then again, I mean, you know, you brought up the point of you know, things that that we're used to having in other languages, like in Active Record, if you wanted to change the database, how do you do that? Like, in Active Record, you use migrations. Well, Realm actually has the same thing as have migrations. So if you needed to change that column name, you could write that migration. And in one of my clients, you know, we have like, you know, 15, 16 migrations where we add a class, add a field to a class, add a couple other classes, et cetera. So that's also the nice thing about Realm is it's very easy to update the database and make changes to it. So you're not stuck with that same schema that you started with. You can actually add and modify to it as time goes on.
Right. Oh, there is one cool thing, speaking about migrations, that I should point out. Realm has this really cool helper, which just says, hey, delete database if you think a migration is needed.
Yeah.
So what this does is, if like you don't want to maintain the local data and you don't want to deal with migrations, you can just slap that on. So anytime Realm thinks that your schema has changed, instead of writing custom migrations, which sometimes can get tricky, right? Like understanding the migration route can be very tricky. In those cases, you can just say, actually, you know what, just delete the database because my API will pull the objects down and I'll just like recreate the database, right?
Yeah, if you have that ability where you're just going to rehydrate on the next, you know, screen load, that's such a huge time saver, because if you have to like manage that data migration process, and this happens and it's not perfect anywhere. It's data migration is always going to be a manual kind of task where you're, you know, extracting, transforming, loading into different areas. So, but if you can use those little helpers where you can just delete it and restart, which makes it so much easier.
Right. And to your point, again, if it's a pure offline app, sometimes you don't get the luxury of just wiping your local data, right? Like you need to maintain that. If you wipe it, you're not going to lose everything. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So in those cases, like, you know, you have to go through the migration route.
Which you brought up a good point, like offline apps. Like there's a lot of situations, and you did this at Wedding Party, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Where you guys had an offline app, but you needed to write like custom server sync logic. Is that correct?
Oh,
you did that?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I mean, so at Wedding Party, this was like crazy good. Like, you know, we were very proud of like the sync mechanism we wrote, because we wrote this all by hand, right? And, you know, it seems like a very simple thing, but this is not simple, folks. Like writing a good sync engine can be ridiculously hard, right?
Yes.
Because there are so many considerations. You got to make sure that you're not sending like the complete data. You're only sending incremental data, but then you want to know which data to pull, which not to pull. So at Wedding Party, it was a pure offline mode app, right? So each thing would function independently. But we also had a web application that was sort of like the master. Like that's where like all the data would be like synced up against.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and we can point to like certain links in the show notes where folks have talked about sync engines, right? Sync engines are very complicated. Trust me, I've written a sync engine. It worked really well. But if people came and asked me to write one, I would say, no, let's just pick a solution. You know, the amount of work that goes into writing a sync engine is almost always not worth it. Unless like, you know, you have like a team that's like willing to just work on that. It's ridiculously hard.
Yeah, and that, you know, that kind of segues perfectly into something Realm recently released, which I unfortunately haven't had any time to play with yet, but it's known as the Realm mobile platform, and it's basically a Realm sync engine with an object store that sits in the, you know, in the cloud, and it has two-way data sync with synchronization and conflict resolution built in for you. So you don't have to build any of that stuff that, you know, that you fought through before. And they do a whole bunch of other stuff, like have events that will trigger server-side notifications when any like data changes on the server. They have like their own custom authentication, access control, and of course, like it's encrypted. I think it's AES 256. So I haven't had a chance to play with it. I really want to. I might do it this week, you know, next week on vacation, just to kind of poke around and see what it's like. But if this solves what they say it's going to solve, I can't imagine how many man hours are going to be saved by doing this.
And this was also another, like, because again, it wasn't just convincing myself. I had to convince my team too, right? Saying, yep, hey, there's a reason we're going, because this is a big change. Adding a database or a data store is not something you just simply do like out of a whim, right?
Yep.
And basically, this was, again, something that we felt was like very convincing. If we did need to go, because again, if we're starting to move like offline, right? Like that's a big project even at Instacart that we did for our shopper app.
Mm-hmm.
If we go to a point where we want to sync data between multiple platforms, this makes it ridiculously easy. Because, and again, like you rightly said, I've not used it as well, but essentially the way it's being pitched is that, hey, you have this iOS database, Realm database, you have this iOS Android database. I don't have to write the sync logic. So all I have to do is just use this Realm mobile platform. And if I issue an update, like if I correct like the name variable in my Android app, like the next time it's pulled from like the iOS application, you already get that update, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so basically they're essentially saying you get the sync engine for free, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I'm saying you get the syncing for free. Now, I think there's a developer version that's free. Now, if you get into like the professional enterprise, I think that's actually one of the things they actually charge for, as I'm looking at the pricing page. But I know that you're doing the developer version, you can get all the syncing for free and so forth. So, but again, if you're paying for that product, and if you can just sit here, it's simple. Like what I do when I'm helping clients understand adopting a new technology, like I'm very against the NIH syndrome, which is not invented here syndrome.
Right.
It's like people are like, well, we're not going to write our own status page. We can write our own. I'm like, all right. And then we're going to write our own analytics engine. Then you start calculating up. Dude, you're going to spend like $150,000, $200,000 writing this and 6 months of time that's not pushing your business forward. Why don't you just spend the money on this other product that does it for you, that costs a little bit of money, and then you can just focus on fixing problems for the customers and not fixing technology problems, you know?
The strongest skill a software engineer can have is to know when to make it somebody else's problem.
Exactly. It's the biggest truth. If it's already, it can't be said any better. I have no words other than what you said. So you, hands down to Kaushik. So if folks wanted to get started with it, I already know how to do it. And it's kind of second nature to me. It's still kind of fresh to you. If you were to recommend someone how to get started with Realm, what would you tell them to do?
This is a good question. So almost all of the content that I need, I get from two places, right?
Mm-hmm.
One is obviously the documentation, and like the documentation is not as detailed, but it's really good. Like, you know, if you go to realm.io/docs/java, /latest, I think. So we'll add a link to that in the show notes. It's a very good place to start just to get a feel of like, what things are. But an even better recommendation that I have, that is my standard go-to now, is I believe you have a Castor.io course on this.
Yeah.
And again, folks, this is not, Don did not prod me to sort of like ask this question. Like he just genuinely asked this question. And this is what I do, right? Because when I started out with the Realm, I was like, this Realm thing, it sounds interesting. I talked to Christian. Like I know that, like I understand the theory, but like, what does it feel like? I want to get a better understanding of what this is. So I made myself a hot cup of coffee. I opened up Castor.io, and I just saw Don use Realm, and I'm like, I'll just see like how things are, because when you see the code, you get a good feeling of how things work.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I did to just because I didn't want to invest that much time if it wasn't something that looked appealing to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's totally the first thing I did. I video courses. So any video course would work. Castor.io works pretty well. So I opened up Castor.io, looked at the courses, got an understanding of how it is. Then I was like, okay, this looks like something I think I can, go behind. So essentially what I did then is I went to the documentation. And as in when you implement, you'll run into like these small sort of quirks, right? Like that we mentioned even over the course of this episode. And usually you'll find that either in the documentation or the GitHub issues. So that was like my strategy. What are your thoughts?
No, I agree. I usually recommend everybody first go to realm.io. And here's the key thing is, today we're mainly focused on Realm Java, and that's because we're, you know, this is an Android podcast. So you can use it for Realm Java, but they also support, you know, Objective-C. They have Objective-C bindings. They have Swift bindings. They also have, which there's starting to be quite a few folks listening to the show from the React Native crowd. There's also a React Native binding too. So you can use it in React Native. And as well, if you are on the .NET side of things and doing cross-platform development, they also have Xamarin bindings as well. So they have all different kinds of them. So go to realm.io, choose your platform, read the docs, and just start hacking away. That's usually what I recommend. And if you need any help, you can always check out the caster.io course. I hope this conversation here has answered a lot of the listeners' questions about what we think about Realm in general, you know, without having someone directly on the Realm team here talking about it. Like, these are our actual real thoughts. I have apps in production with Realm, have had some for, you know, close to a year now. It's been performing well. You're starting to use it now. I have a bunch of friends of mine that use it. So again, hopefully it answers your questions. If you don't, please hit us up on Twitter and we'll try to help you out.
If there are like things that we mentioned offhand that you would like more clarification on, just feel free to hit us up on Twitter and we'll make sure to like give you the details or like the context or like the specifics for the stuff that we mentioned. If folks wanted to reach out to you and find out more about like Realm's specifics that we just talked about, what would be the good way to do that?
They can reach me at Don Felker on Twitter. And what about folks, if they want to ask you about some of the weird nuances or ways you've learned about Realm, how would they reach you?
Please do. And do it on Twitter at Kaushik Gopal, which is my Twitter handle. And yeah, no, seriously, folks, we are very interested. And this is a big part of like the learning for us too, right? Like if you keep asking the quirky questions or like the things that come up that seem like a no-go for you, this is how we find out, and we are fortunate enough to like be able to find answers so we can jointly learn in the process, right?
Yep, exactly. And we've had many folks ask us especially about, you know, our thought process on the MVP pattern, MV star or whatever. We have another one of these conversations planned for those type of things too. So please ask the questions and we'll get them in here.
All right. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.
Once again, we'd like to thank our sponsor for today's episode, BuddyBuild. BuddyBuild is a mobile optimized continuous integration and delivery platform that takes just a few minutes to set up. Join thousands of developers who've already added BuddyBuild to their development process. Try it free today. Go to fragmentedpodcast.com/BuddyBuild.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit all of the Fragmented episodes ourselves. The amazing Sarah from Spec helps us with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme music and ad music is produced by the cool cat, Alan Taylor. You can find more episodes of the show on Pocket Casts, Google Play Music, or any of the other great podcast players in town. Our website is fragmentedpodcast.com, and you can find the links to all the stuff we say on our website. Thank you all for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.